Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and as always, I am thrilled to be here with you. So I'm coming to you today from a point a little distance than where I normally am. I'm not in New Jersey today. Today, I find myself in Glen Falls, New York. Now, Glen Falls, New York is a part of the Adirondack mountain chain and part of the Adirondack Park. It's at the southern end. And Glen Falls, if anybody has seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart, you know, the Christmas movie we all like with Clarence the Angel and all of that. If we remember, Bedford Falls was a fictitious upstate New York community where the Bailey Building and Loan originated from. And George Bailey and his family, you know, that's where the story unfolds of good and evil and the fight against evil Mr. Potter and all that. If you haven't seen it, it is absolute Americana. The movie, the story, the characters, but the setting is what's amazing. Now, I've spent a lot of time in the Adirondack Mountains. I think it's absolutely beautiful. Glen Falls is very, very close to Lake George, which is probably something most people in the country have heard of. Lake George is an amazing place, a gigantic lake, gorgeous, very touristy at one end. I will have to say that's very touristy at one end. There's restaurants and stuff. You can rent boats and parasailing and all that. And there's these gigantic, they look like riverboats, you know, with the big sail and the big, what do they call it? The thing in the back of the boat, like they have on the Mississippi River, the paddle boat. Obviously, that doesn't really move the boat anymore. They're big, big, powerful engines. But there's seven or eight of these boats up here. And they could take you on a tour of the lake for an hour, half hour, 2 hours, whatever. It's a great way to see the crystal clear water, the beautiful birds flying around, the mountain scenery. It's really an amazing place. But let's get back to It's a Wonderful Life, because I'm making a point here. I want you to stick with me. So if you've ever seen A Wonderful Life, then you see that little town of Bedford Falls. Well, here I am in Glen Falls, New York, and this is Bedford Falls. This little town is exactly like Bedford Falls in the movie. It is quaint, and it's filled with little shops and little businesses. And so much so that, you know, Kathleen and I, my wife, we're walking up the street and I'm screaming out, you know, a line from the movie. There you are, you old building and loan. So if anybody knows the movie, you know that line. But a thing that's striking to me about being here is the theme of the movie was about good and evil. And the people in the movie, you could tell it was made in the 1940s. They were good, solid Americans. They loved America. They loved freedom. You know, the whole theme of George Bailey and Bailey Building and Loan, helping poor people to buy a house so that they could live the American dream. You know, four walls and a couple of bedrooms and a bathroom. Is that too much to ask, Mr. Potter? You know, if you remember that. And that's the exact feeling you get here in upstate New York. You know, it's kind of funny. You know, we're used to downstate New York where there's this much more pervasive liberal kind of an attitude. You know, New York City and the surrounding communities. Long Island is a very strong conservative place. Very interesting. Nassau County, Suffolk County, a very conservative place. But the city, the five boroughs of New York, and lots of northern New Jersey are all very, very liberal places. But up here, you see American flags. You see people honoring America. You see signs in people's yards about, you know, they love the cops, they love the military. It's really refreshing. And when you talk to people, it's kind of funny because people don't always know where you're coming from. You know, in this politically correct world we live in, we don't know exactly how to talk to each other because we no longer live in a world where I can just disagree with you. And I can say, boy, you know, I don't agree with that. Now, if I don't agree with you, you're not likely to say to me, well, how come? Here's what I believe, and then I would argue my case. Now it's much more likely that you'll say, oh, you must hate somebody. Oh, you must hate people. You must be a bigot. You must be a homophobe. You must be this, you must be that, because you disagree with me and my progressive left-wing kind of thinking. And anybody who is involved with anything to do with the conservative movement or understanding, you know, what people do in a conservative world, know that there's nothing true to that at all. There's no bigotry. It's just looking at the world from a different point of view. But up here, it's so refreshing. What I'm doing up here, I'm at the New York State Police Chiefs Convention. So all the police chiefs from the state of New York, from all over, they hold meetings at different parts of the state, but then they hold a big convention every summer where they get together and they talk about new police training, trends in law enforcement, equipment, training, what they need to do for their police departments, how to better police the communities that they've sworn to serve. So I'm up here with my company, and we are talking about our police training, because our job is to help train the men and women of law enforcement, keep schools safe and that kind of thing. So we're up here and we're visiting with these chiefs, and it's even more profound in a law enforcement environment, because for the most part, most law enforcement personnel are more conservative than they are liberal. They believe in right and wrong. They believe in good and evil. There is a lot of things are black and white, in that there's not a lot of gray sometimes, and they're pro-American, pro-military, and they just want to do the right thing. They want everyone to live their lives as best as they can within the law, act lawfully, and you have great friends in law enforcement. But when you come up to talk to somebody, and again, you don't know who here at the show is a vendor, and vendors are people that exhibit at the show, try and sell their equipment or their product to the law enforcement community, and who's law enforcement. So you might have some vendors who are here trying to sell their stuff to the law enforcement community, but they are very progressive or very liberal in their personal beliefs. And nobody wants to offend anybody. I mean, the vendors who are liberal don't want to offend the conservative police officers, and the conservative, in general, police officers don't want to offend the liberal exhibitors who are trying to sell their stuff. We all have a mission. We're trying to go ahead and use people's equipment and their skills and services to make the world a safer, better place. That's the whole idea. But you'll see people will come up to each other and they'll say, gee, that's a lot of crime going on. Crime is on the rise, isn't it? And you can't really tell all the time who's law enforcement, who's an exhibitor. And you'll see the couched responses are like, well, it's really been bad in the cities. The cities are really bad. But there's a lot of reasons. And then slowly but surely it comes out in the conversation. Turns out, if you're pro-law enforcement, you kind of get the idea that the cops are not at fault here. The cops are actually, they're backing off. The cops are backing off because to do their job, they could find themselves in a great deal of trouble. Because people don't want the cops around until they want the cops around. They don't want police to do police work until they need police work to be done. And they want police work to be done as long as they're doing it against somebody else and not against them. So cops got to be really careful today. And it's just interesting to see a setting like this, Glen Falls, New York, Lake George area, that looks just like rock-ribbed, red, white, and blue America, Bedford Falls, in the movie It's a Wonderful Life. So that's kind of what I wanted to give you a picture of where I am today and what I'm doing. And it's leading into, I guess, some of the topics that I want to talk about here. We are still in the midst of this. I know the pandemic and the vaccine-edemic. And do you get the vaccine or not get the vaccine? We're finding out now the vaccine is not as 99% effective as they said it was. And now we have, you know, the Delta variant, what's next, the Epsilon variant, and you just keep going on and on. And we still have not come to any answers here. Is the purpose of all of this to control us or to really help us. And that's the quest we're still on here. And it's a personal quest for me. I travel a lot, and I've been traveling recently for business. And you get on an airplane, a train, or a bus, you know, any kind of a municipal service or city service, you have to wear your mask. Now, in the rest of the world, the rest of the place, even within that same city, you don't have to wear a mask outdoors or indoors. But on public transportation, you do. And then we're seeing, are the unvaccinated doing the right thing by following their beliefs? Or, as we hear a lot of people say, they're endangering everyone else with their crazy thinking that it's a government conspiracy to hurt you with the virus, with the vaccine, and you're only out there to kill people. So much that we're seeing people really now start to talk about mandating everyone has to be vaccinated, whether they want to be or not. This is a dangerous place for us to go. But the arguments are being made that if you are vaccinated, you still should wear the mask in certain circumstances. And why would that be? Let's think about that for a minute. I don't want to get the vaccine because it's experimental. It could do things to me immediately. There are lots of injuries, lots of permanent injuries. There are deaths from taking the vaccine. Many, many more deaths than would normally be tolerated. If you had a vaccine that killed 100 people, 100 people, they would pull it off the market. If you believe the government records, there's been over 5,000 deaths from COVID vaccines. 5,000, not 100, 5,000. And instead of pulling it off the market, we're told you're a conspiracy theorist if you are concerned about the thing. It's safe, it's perfectly safe. It's perfectly safe unless it's not safe. So what are we supposed to believe? Now, when I say it's personal, it's because I have been traveling. And I've been on airplanes and I have to wear a mask the whole time. You got to wear it the whole time in the airport. You got to wear the mask when you're in an Uber. You got to wear the mask when you're on a public train or a bus. Well, why is that? Who are we trying to protect by that? If people are vaccinated, aren't they no longer at risk for the virus? They got vaccinated. They did what they were told. They took the experimental drug and now they are safe. The only person I'm going to endanger as an unvaccinated person are other unvaccinated people who are willing to take the chance of getting infected because they don't want to take the vaccine. But we don't see that to be the case, do we? We see that people who have been vaccinated, fully vaccinated, following all government guidelines, and they're getting COVID. How is it possible to get COVID from something that you're vaccinated from? Especially if you didn't want to take it, but you did it because you felt you had to do it, because the government tells you and everybody else tells you you're a killer if you don't, and you still get COVID, and people who are vaccinated get COVID and they're dying. Now, granted, in much smaller numbers. They're trying to make us believe now, and I don't know that it's not true. So I'll tell you that. I don't know that it's not true. We don't get real truth from the news and the media, so it's hard to tell. They're trying to tell us now that most of the new cases of the Delta variant are people who are unvaccinated, that it's not getting to the vaccinated people. It's the unvaccinated people who are getting the COVID and having the problems. Well, if that's the case, then that certainly would lead us to believe that perhaps the vaccine is working. If it's keeping the vaccinated from getting the virus, that's the purpose, right? So then you would say, well, pretty clear then. Then unvaccinated people are the ones who are going to get it, and they should probably consider getting it if it would help them. But that's not the case. Vaccinated people are still getting the virus, not in his numbers. The numbers are way down all across the board, no matter what we look at. But how many people are hospitalized? And how many people are dying now from COVID? The numbers are very, very low. Now, if it's somebody in your family or you, it's a very high number. But in general, the numbers are very, very low. But we're threatened to go back to mask mandates now. New Jersey governor, if I have to go back, I will. We've had 343 new cases out of 8 million New Jersey residents. 343. we may have to go back to wearing masks all the time again. But in Florida, they're still not wearing masks. They're still completely free down there. I was down in Florida. I was in Orlando. I think I told you that a few weeks ago. I didn't get sick while I was down there. I didn't wear a mask the whole time I was down there. I was in bars. I was in restaurants. I was talking to people. I came home. I counted my 14 days, waited to see if I had any symptoms, and lo and behold, I did not. So that's the problem. We're still unsure what we should be doing. Even more makes this even more personal is as I try and decide, do I want to just put up with this and take my chance with the vaccine, get my card so that when they start demanding it on an airplane, when they want to see my papers, when the government starts demanding to see my papers, I can show them my papers and I'll be allowed to get on airplanes and buses and go to concerts and whatnot. Or do I hold my ground and take my chance? Now, one of my children is heading off to college. Actually, two of them are in college currently. My daughter is fully vaccinated. She's 22 years old. She made the decision that she wanted to take the vaccine. She believed that it would keep her safe. And I supported her in that decision because she's a grown adult. Granted, a young adult, but she's the one who had to make this decision. Now, we talked. My wife and I sat down with my two college-age kids and had this conversation where we talked about, you know, it could affect your ability to reproduce in females. We're seeing that's a distinct side effect of the vaccines. She said she understood, but she also had her own research that showed that it was a very, very small number, and she didn't think she'd be affected. So therefore, she wanted to take the vaccine, and she did. Fair enough. I supported her in it. She didn't have any side effects whatsoever. She had the vaccine and took both shots and seems to be perfectly fine. What it does to her in the long term, we don't know. When it comes to my son, who's heading off to college, there's a mandate on his campus, as there are in many campuses, that you must be vaccinated or wear a mask at all times. If they're going to let you on the campus being unvaccinated, you will wear a mask all the time, 24 hours a day. They're not separating people by dorms, vaccinated or unvaccinated. That would be inconvenient for them to do. They've already made dorm assignments. So therefore, if you're unvaccinated and you're in a room with somebody who's vaccinated, you must wear your mask in your dorm room. You must wear it anywhere on campus except outside. So you're going to take these college kids and you're going to make them wear these masks, which we know rebreathing the mask constantly all day long is not healthy. Young people who, if they did get the virus, it would probably breeze right past them. Of course, some of them will have a hard time, but the overwhelming giant majority would have no problem whatsoever. So I'm trying to guide my son, who's 18. He's a very smart young man. He's done his own research. He's a religious young man, so much so that he applied for and received a religious exemption from the vaccine from his university. They said, yes, he made a good case as a religious concern that he has because he doesn't like the fact that aborted tissue was used in the manufacture of the vaccine. He didn't want to be a part of that. So therefore, he doesn't want to be vaccinated for that reason alone. Well, the college, the university accepted this. And they said to him they would accept his religious exemption, which is fantastic, except for the fact that they said, well, if you're going to come here with your exemption, you have to wear the mask all the time. Now, my question is, his potential roommate that he's going to be staying with has been vaccinated. So who does my son endanger? If the vaccine works, then why does he have to wear a mask in the room? It wouldn't matter. The kid's vaccinated, so he can't get it, right? But no, that's not what they're saying. So why are we finding that the number, and I get different. I'm trying to piece this information together. Some people say it went from 94% effective, the vaccine. Now it's really, we're realizing it's about 65% effective with the variant D, the D variant, the Delta variant. We're still going to demand everyone do it, and you're still going to wear masks? I don't know. I can beat this thing up, but as a father, I'm struggling with this. I'm struggling with this. I'm struggling to do the right thing by my son, to advise him properly, to give him guidance on what I think. In the background, am I concerned that the virus could hurt him, I am. Because the virus can hurt people, especially young men can be hurt. You know, the one vaccine, the one dose vaccine, we're seeing a lot of heart problems for young men, swollen hearts. Now, is that leading to death? Not in all cases, but it has in some. But it's a swollen heart, and that's not good to have a swollen heart. When will that come back? 10 years from now? 3 years from now? 5 years from now? We don't know. This is all experimental. By law, by federal law, you can't make people take an experimental drug. You know, the Nuremberg laws came out of the Nazi Germany era, where you can't make people be part of experiments unless they concede unless they give their full consent, right? But they're doing it anyway. Well, you don't have to go to the school. So now you're threatening people with their future and their livelihood. So this is where I'm going to leave the vaccine talk for today. It is because it's still out there. And I know a lot of you are trying to deal with it. I know a lot of people are saying, no, the vaccination rate has leveled off, where I think 60% of Americans have been vaccinated and the other 40% won't. And what we hear from government representatives is that they're stupid. The people who won't do it are stupid, that they're selfish, that they want to kill everyone, that they don't understand, that they're following conspiracy theories. And all of that is lip service because, like many things, it's not addressing the real concerns people have. The real concerns people have is, why are we only allowed one side of the story? Why does anyone, even medical doctors with great credentials, who want to say something against the vaccine, are blocked on social media? They're not allowed to have a voice. They are silenced. Right? Why is that? How can? Obviously, it feels like there's something wrong. And instead of addressing these concerns, instead of coming out and say, listen, let's deal with the number of deaths. Let's explain to the people why, if there was a vaccine that killed 100 people, we would pull it off the market immediately. But here we have one with a minimum of 5,000 deaths and maybe as much as 50,000 deaths. And not only are we not pulling it off the market, we're demanding everyone take it. Politicians are demanding that people take it. Some politicians are saying we should make it mandated, and anyone who doesn't participate, we should make their life so difficult that they go get the shot. Right? Look what they're doing in France. They're having protests in the street demanding that President Macron resign because he wants to make passports, you know, papers. We want to see your papers. Well, what's next? What kind of papers next do you have to show? Are you going to go from state to state and you have to show papers what state you're from? Are you a vaccinated state? Are you a blue state or are you a red state? If you're from a red state, we have to see what else you participate in. You have to pull over to the side of the road here while we check you out before you come into this state, because you're from one of them crazy Republican, right-wing, God-loving, America-loving states. And we think you probably hate a lot of people and you're dangerous. So we're going to give you an extra look. Is that where we're going? You see, and people laugh at something like that. And we say, that could never happen. That could never happen. Did we ever see, we would see a time when our free speech was not only curtailed, but was stopped? You can't say certain things. The speech police, you will lose your job. You will be barred from public. You're supposed to have any speech should be on the public soapbox. But that's not the case anymore. If you don't say the right things, if you don't say the approved things, if you don't go along with the only line that's permitted, you'll be cut out from society. You'll be ostracized. You'll lose your job. You'll lose your ability to function in society. Well, we never thought that would happen. But I can tell you, it's absolutely true and it's real. We can look around and see it. We know it's real. So the question here is, where is this all leading to? And that's some of the questions I think we have to address. Here on America Out Loud, we do address that. You know, each one of our shows that are here on the network are about free speech. The great Malcolm Out Loud, that's all he ever says to anybody is give your opinion, give a good, strong, solid opinion, whatever it is, whichever way you go. Give your thoughts. Say what's on your mind, right? That is the essence of free speech. Now, I can listen to somebody. I can listen to Malcolm on his show and I could say, you know what? I completely disagree with what he said. Or I can say, I completely agree with what he said. Or I agree with a little bit. or I agree with some of it, or none of it, whatever. And then I think about, well, let me see what he said about this. Then I research it and find out, you know, he was right, or I find out he was wrong. Maybe I call his show. Maybe I go on his show and I argue with him. Here's where I think you're wrong, Malcolm. Here's what I found out. And then he argues with me. Gee, Lieutenant Joe, here's what I found out. And we try to come to some kind of an understanding. That is free speech. That is America Out Loud. That's what it is. That's why each one of us here on the station, on the network, are trying to give our opinion. I'm asking questions. And in the world of we never thought it would come to that, isn't asking questions now considered problematic? Depending on the questions that you're asking. If you ask certain questions, you must be one of them. You're not one of us. And there certainly is a side, isn't there? Aren't we seeing journalists now come out and openly say that, well, you know, the whole give both sides argument is really kind of stupid to give both sides the same amount of coverage, especially if one side is wrong. Well, who's to decide which side is wrong? And that's what these journalists are saying. They're looking at it now, instead of going, hey, listen, we're just supposed to report. Now they're saying bias is okay, because if you look at a situation and you know that there's side A and side B, and you treat them both fairly, you treat them both equally to give their opinions, but they know that side A is right and side B is wrong, why would we do that? Why would we give side B any traction whatsoever? We know it's wrong, so we'll be biased against it. The problem is, who makes the decision of what's right and wrong? What's fair? What's truth? What's fiction? What's conspiracy? All right, we'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice, and then we're going to start talking about the January 6th Commission, and we're going to find out, is there any truth in any of that? We'll be right back.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
All right, my friends, welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. We are in a search for truth here. We're trying to figure out what's right and wrong, what's up and down, what's good and what's bad. So, keeping ourselves healthy, I have some updates for you. I told you a while ago that I started taking a Healthy Cell, the Immune Super Boost. These are supplements that come in a little package. You can open it up, mix it with water. You can take it right out of the package. I've always said I like it right out of the package. It's a blackberry flavor, and it's supposed to help boost your immune system. Well, I have to tell you, I've been taking them now for 6 weeks, and it seems to be working. It really does. I'm not somebody that falls for placebos. I'm not somebody that, I think I feel better. Let me think if I must be feeling better if I think I feel. That's not how I live. I'm 59 years old, right? I'm a healthy guy, but I also know when I'm not feeling well, when I'm feeling down, when I'm feeling just not strong, just not healthy. And I told you I have a lot of sinus issues. There's a pain in my neck my whole life. But since I've been taking this Healthy Cell, I feel much better. I'm on a string now of weeks in a row where I'm feeling stronger, I'm feeling healthier, I'm feeling better. And I'm trying to figure a way, how do I tell you about this without sounding like, oh, he must be pushing this for some reason. I'm not. I get nothing out of this, right? I'm trying it because I wanted to see if I could be healthier, if I could feel healthier. And I got to tell you, got to report back to you, I am feeling healthier. I am feeling better. So if you're looking for that, I would say take a look at the Healthy Cell Immune Boost. Give it a try. They're on the station here all the time. They advertise here. Give them a call. Try it. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work. But I'm telling you, I think it will. Because I was not surprised, but I like to be skeptical about things. Let's see. And I'm actually very happy that it's working. So I wanted to make sure I told you about that. Give it a try. Healthy Cell Immune Boost. It's pretty good. They also make one for sleeping if you have problems sleeping. I don't have trouble sleeping. I sleep like a baby because I have a good conscience. But if you're having trouble, take a look. They also make a product for helping you to sleep. So Healthy Cell. It's our friend. I like it. Okay. The truth. What is the truth? Is the truth subjective? Is the truth something that can change depending on someone's point of view? I think that not on the facts. Facts, truth doesn't change based on facts because facts are facts. We went to the moon. Well, we saw a rocket take off. We had lots and lots of astronauts go there, land there, and come back with rocks and minerals, and they testified that they actually went to the moon. Well, those are facts. You'd have to say they're all in on this great conspiracy that we never went to the moon. It was actually in the desert somewhere in Arizona, and we just wanted people to think we went there. Well, that's a conspiracy theory. That's nut. That somebody's got some ideas. Another one is that, you know, when we see 9/11, they show you the towers, and they're coming down. That was an inside government job. George Bush wanted to do that. Look at the floors blowing out below the place where the was on fire, because those were the bombs shutting the... No. When you know about dynamics of how buildings collapse, we know that as the floors were coming down, the air pressure down below was blowing out the windows. That's what it was. It wasn't bombs being set in there. Ridiculous, right? So the truth doesn't change by facts, because facts are facts. Opinion, belief are the things that change the way people perceive things. Doesn't change the truth. The truth is the truth. So when we look at the January 6th commission, we have to ask ourselves, is it a genuine concern that this group of people who went to the Capitol building and then forced their way inside, when I say forced their way inside, I got to tell you, I've seen the videos. There were people smashing windows and going in. All wrong. You can't smash windows in our government buildings. You can't go into a place where you're not supposed to be. That's trespassing. Absolutely it is. It's inappropriate. Did it endanger the politicians inside, both the Republicans and the Democrats and the independents? Yes, I think that's a bad thing. When you got people coming into somebody's workplace, forcing their way in by breaking windows and doors and climbing in, or by being let in, because I also saw videos where you saw officers and people around and people were just walking right past them going into the building. You know, that still doesn't make it right, right? Like I said this before, I've been to the Capitol and I know you can't just go walking in there. That's where people work, right? There's rules. These are people that are under threat, not necessarily from that particular crowd. But you could certainly infer that that was a dangerous crowd. Nobody knows what was going to happen when those people started going in there. But it's all in the perception of it. So if we take that at face value and say the events of January 6th were real, people went in that building. Now they want to do this investigation. So as an investigator myself, I look at it and say, how would I conduct this investigation? Well, you have to understand the ground rules. What is it we're investigating? So our friends on the left and the media, of course, want to make it as politically damaging to the right and conservative members of the government and people like you and me who are more conservative. They want to attack us as best as they can. They want to use this as a political tool. They also want to attack Donald Trump because they want to make sure he don't run again. They want to keep him and anyone who thinks like him as far away as possible. So they're going to use whatever they can. Now that's my conjecture on that. So now let's ask ourselves that fundamental question. Is it possible that a political party, and I'm not saying which one, but in this case, the Democrat Party, but it could also easily be the Republican Party who would do a thing like this. Would politicians, let's put it that way, would politicians use lies, subterfuge, twisted stories, contorted facts to make their case to damage the other party? Well, I think the answer is clearly, of course they would. We see it every single day. You know, there's a saying that politics is a blood sport. And that might be true, but it's also inappropriate that it's a blood sport. How about, you know, well, I see, and this is where I'm pie in the sky, and I get that. So anybody that's sitting there right now going, Lieutenant Joe, you are naive. You know, wouldn't it be great if our politicians had ideas about government and what government could do for people and how to help people and all that kind of stuff, and they would figure out what's best for everyone and how they can make that work for everyone within our laws and our constitution so that it's proper and everyone is protected in our rights and everything. Yeah, that would be great. And yes, that would be naive to think that that's how the world is. Is it possible that that's how the world was and we are now in a place where we are so broken that, you know, that genie is not going back in the bottle? Right? That genie's not going back in the bottle. Are we going to go back to having politicians who can, even if they wanted to, be good and upright and constitutional and worry about all, can they go back and win any battles where they gain any power to do anything? I don't think so. I think the games have changed so much now at this point, that it is almost impossible. Which puts us in a very, very strange place. So my question is, if I'm the investigator, I want to know, what are the motivations for the investigation? Okay? And let me draw a parallel for you. In the world of law enforcement and investigation, we often use informants or confidential sources of information. Now, a confidential source of information or an informant comes to us from lots and lots of places. So normally, we find confidential informants and confidential sources of information from people who are in trouble in some way. They got themselves involved in trouble, and in order to help themselves, they're going to provide law enforcement with information about other criminal activity that law enforcement may not be able to gather. So here's an example to make it simple. You catch a guy who's done 5 or 6 house burglaries. He broke into people's houses and stole their stuff. And you find him, you catch him, and you arrest him. And now he's done 5 burglaries. You have his fingerprints. You have maybe some video camera of him going in and out of the house, selling the property at a pawn shop or something. You have enough proof to convict this person of 5 burglaries. Which means, based on most state laws, after 5 burglaries of residences, you're going to go to jail for 2 to 5 years. And this burglar does not want to go to jail for 2 to 5 years. So the burglar says to the officer, "Officer, if I was to give you information about somebody who is selling drugs, or if I was to tell you about somebody who's doing human trafficking, would that help me with my burglary charge?" Now the officer then evaluates this information and says, "Okay, I can't promise you anything," because the cops can't promise people anything. What they do is they go to the prosecutor or the judge and they say, "Judge, prosecutor, this individual says they have information about a very serious crime of human trafficking or narcotics sales, you know, in our community, and they're willing to help us with an investigation by giving us information, pointing us in the right direction so that we can conduct an investigation and break up those kind of things. We can go and arrest people who are doing human trafficking and save people, and we can stop drug dealing and save people from overdosing and dying." Now, the courts and the prosecutors, they look at the scale of what the person has been charged with. Okay, this person is charged with 5 burglaries. Nobody was home in the houses. Nobody was injured. They stole property. We've recovered the property, and we can send the person to jail for, you know, 2 to 5 years. Now, human trafficking, people are being sexually assaulted, sold into prostitution. With the drugs, we know how many people are overdosing and dying, are young people. That's a very, very, it's a much more serious, put it that way. Burglary is serious. These human trafficking and drug dealing, much more serious than five burglaries of uninhabited burglaries. So the prosecutor says, yes, if this person can give us good information, maybe we will give them probation instead of sending them to jail. They're still held to account for what they did, but maybe instead of going to jail for 2 to 5, they'll go to jail for 2 months, or they'll get probation for 10 years or something. So they weigh the differences. Now they go back to that person and they say, hey, listen, here's what they're willing to do for you. Tell us what you know. And at that point, the informant will say, okay, here are the people that are doing the human trafficking. Here's where they hide the people that they're trafficking. Here's who they sell them to. Here's where you can find those people. Here's the houses they're living in. And the police conduct that investigation. They get a search warrant. They go in. They find maybe children who are missing or being exploited. Women are being exploited. Are immigrants, undocumented immigrants that are being exploited in the same way. And you save all those people's lives. Now, that informant did a good thing. That informant provided us with something that's good for society, and they get the benefit of not going to jail for 2 to 5 years for their actions. Now, that is a positive way of looking at an informant and a confidential source. Now that you understand that, that's where they come from, right? Now we want to look at and say, what are somebody else's motivations for being an informant? Other than protecting themselves, helping themselves get out of charges. Well, sometimes there's vindictiveness. Sometimes there's jealousy. Sometimes there is other motives that are not as pure as trying to save themselves. So we've seen lots and lots of cases where somebody will be in a relationship with somebody and the relationship goes bad. And to get back at them, they'll go to the police and go, hey, listen, this guy, this girl is involved in this and I'll tell you all about it. Now, doesn't mean what the people are doing isn't bad. But when you're evaluating an informant, you have to weigh their motivation, because if their motivation is revenge, that's very unreliable. See, and that's what the courts look at, reliability or unreliability. So the point I'm trying to make here is to give you this understanding of, you know, when an investigation, we want to understand what is the motivation for the investigation. Is it genuine? Are the people that are conducting the investigation doing so because they want to understand the truth about a situation, or are they using it for revenge or attack or some other inappropriate motive? In the case of the January 6th commission, we know that politics is as raw and bloody and horrific as it has ever been in our country. Now, it's always been bad. Go back and read the advertisements that they used during George Washington's presidency and Thomas Jefferson. It was horrific, the things they said about each other. It's a blood sport. But today we've lost our integrity. Today we've lost our honor. Today we do and say anything. If we lie really good and it gets us what we want, people applaud that now. Hey, that's great. You got over, man. That's excellent, right? Our politicians don't care if they're telling us the truth or not. They don't care if it's good or bad. If it gives them what they want, they'll do it. And that is wholly inappropriate for society. Societies don't survive when that is the motivations of leadership and how it works. So in this case, the January 6th Commission, the question is, was that a true insurrection? Were those people who went into that building, who were let in, broke windows, climbed in, did what they did, were they a genuine threat to our government and our way of life? Because our friends on the left are telling us they absolutely were. And I've posited this before. If they had gone in there and taken control of that building and all the politicians in there, both sides of the aisle, they controlled them. They had them there. They wouldn't let them leave. Would that make those people in charge of the government? Would that guy in that funky hat with the horns and the running around with the flag, would that have made him the president of the United States if he took over that building? Is that the insurrection that would have toppled the United States government if they had been completely successful? No, of course it wouldn't. Wouldn't have done anything. What we would have had was a very, very bad hostage scene where law enforcement eventually would have went in there and freed the politicians. doesn't mean people wouldn't have been hurt or killed. That's absolutely true. So that's a good motivation. Let's understand what was the real motives of these people who went in there. Were they there to really take over the government? Or could it have been something else? Now, doesn't mean what they did was right and it should be investigated and people who did things wrong should be held to account. What I see is I see a group of people who trespassed. Okay? Now, we heard the story about the officer who was hit by a fire extinguisher and murdered by this mob. And we find out that wasn't true. That officer was a hero because he's a law enforcement officer. He had a family. He had friends. He was a good, decent man. He was doing his job that day trying to protect the Capitol. That's what we wanted him there for. And these people in the group, they came in and tried to get in. And the officer was fine. He was not hit in the head with a fire extinguisher. We were lied to about that. Who did that serve to lie and tell that story over and over again? Have we actually heard the facts of that? The autopsy came out. All the reports came out. They kept them from us for a long time, didn't they? The people in charge? They wanted you to believe this officer was murdered. Right? And if somebody in that group had hit that law enforcement officer or any officer with a fire extinguisher in the head and killed him, that would be a homicide. And that would be something they would go to prison for the rest of their life or face the death penalty or whatever the appropriate penalties in that state would be. But we know now that that was not true. The officer died from a stroke. Now, he was a young man, so a stroke seems highly unlikely. But you have to ask yourself, remember, you're investigators now. You're on my investigation team. Do young people at his age, do they ever die from strokes? Well, you know what? They do. It happens. Human bodies are frail. You know, it may be the stress of that day brought on the stroke. I don't know. I'm not a medical person. Do I believe that's a possibility? Sure. I believe that's a possibility. Could it be a linked cause for his stroke? I could, but the doctors cannot definitively say that because we just don't know. As advances throughout, we don't know. But the bottom line is this officer, a hero who died doing his job, or actually after his day shift was over, he was not hit in the head and murdered by a member of the mob who was trying to conduct an insurrection and take over the government. That's not what happened at all. But that's how it's framed. So my investigation has to understand a couple of things. What actually happened? What were the motivations of the people who did it? Because that certainly can have a bearing on culpability. You know, who's responsible for what? How did they behave when they were there? Were they allowed in? Did the officers that were there allow them in, as we saw in some of those videos? Standing back and let them go through the door? Was that the only option that they had? Because you had one or two officers. You're not going to stop a crowd of 60, 80, 100 people, 300 people coming through a door. You're not. So was that the tactical thing to do for those officers to get out of the way? Right? They're not there to die for their job unless there was, you know, violence going on. And there wasn't. There was people just coming into the building. Did that put the politicians in danger? Yes, it did. People coming into a workplace like that, that was danger. Was it deadly force danger? That's our next question. We know a young lady that was there, part of that group that went in that building, was unarmed, and she was shot and killed. She's the only one. And law enforcement shot and killed her. We saw the video. We saw the officer's hands extending out with a weapon in it. We saw the gunshot, and the young lady was killed. She was unarmed. She was not attacking the officer specifically. She was coming through the door with the crowd. Do we know who that officer is? In every other police shooting in America, don't we get that information? Here's the officer. Here's their record. Here's their history of complaints, all this kind of stuff. Don't we get all of that immediately? We still don't know this officer's name. It's a rumor. It's a rumor that it was this particular, but it's already been cleared, and therefore, nobody has a right to know. Well, who do you mean have a right to know? We have a law enforcement officer that fired their weapon on duty, and a young lady died. Now, let's hear the facts that you considered this to be justified. Now, as a law enforcement officer, I'm not going to tell you it wasn't justified. I don't know all the facts. If he felt, and this is my conjecture again, if that officer, who was obviously outnumbered, was concerned for the safety of the people in that building that he was protecting, and that was his job, and he saw this crowd coming through the door, and he couldn't stop them, could he have felt at that moment that their lives were in danger and he had to take some action? He had to go up the continuum of force to stop this crowd from getting into that building and harming the people he was sworn to protect. And therefore, he had to use deadly force to do it. That's the crux of this. That's how it comes down. That's how you determine use of force. Was it necessary to protect your own life or the life of a third party? So in this case, we see the officer fire one shot, it looks like, at one young lady when there was lots of other people around as she was coming through a window or a door. And then there was no other shooting. Is that the facts of the case? It seems to be. But why aren't we told who the officer is? Why don't we know? So my investigation wants to know the motivation of the officer that fired the round. I want to know what that young lady was doing specifically that the officer felt like he had to use deadly force to stop her. Now, was he stopping her? Or did he figure that firing at one person would show the crowd that they were serious, that they should back off? Did he feel he was in such danger and the people he was protecting, the third parties he was protecting, were in such danger that he had to do that? It was the only way to protect them. I think there's a lot here that can be dissected and looked at in the light of day. But we don't even know his name. You're not allowed to say his name, the rumored name that's out there, the rumored rank that's out there. How come? These are the things that make people concerned. The other thing, when they describe it in the media, as I'm reading through the different news groups, newspapers and media, they describe this as an out-of-control, pro-Trump insurrection mob. Pro-Trump insurrection mob. They impeached President Trump, saying he incited this violence. Even in the fact that we heard him while he was giving the speech, never once did he tell them to go down and attack the Capitol, break in, go after the politicians. He said, go down there, march down there, and peacefully let your voices be heard. Isn't that the essence of what all of these other groups in our country that are out burning, looting, rioting, going crazy, aren't they trying to make their voices heard? And do we prosecute them? No, exactly the opposite. We dismissed all the charges. Officers were really injured and killed in those events. And we're dropping most of those charges. Millions and billions of dollars of property was destroyed. People's businesses ruined. And we're dropping the charges. But the people that went into the Capitol, they're being painted as insurrectionists. When we know that there was no insurrection. There was you can even say a mob. You want to call them a mob? They were a mob. A mob is a big group of people like that doing something. Okay, I'll call them a mob. They were a mob. Did they get out of hand? They did. Did they do the wrong thing? They did. Did they trespass? Yes, they did. The last time I checked, you don't shoot and kill somebody for trespassing. That's not how it works. But why are we being told that? And why are they calling it a pro-Trump mob? Okay? Let's break that down, because I have some information to think about. A pro-Trump mob. Were the people there that day, all of them, the thousands and thousands of people that were listening to the president speak, were they pro-Trump? I think that's fair. That's fair to say, pro-Trump. They were pro-Trump citizens. They were in favor of their president, right? He was not an enemy of the state. He was the president of the United States, duly elected president of the United States. He was having a rally. He was using his free speech. He was calling on the people to protect their rights. He was concerned that the election may have some fraud in it and that it wasn't correct. He's the leader of the country, and he was voicing his concerns. You could say they were inappropriate concerns, but do we know everything about the elections? Aren't we finding every day in all these lawsuits that there were things wrong, that there were more voters that voted than were on the rolls? Don't we find that people voted in two locations? Don't we find that dead people voted? So there was a lot here to consider. But the fact is, instead of calling him and everyone else who has concerns crazy conspiracy theorists, why don't we say, let's take a good look at this and do an investigation. Let's investigate these claims and then bring out the truth. The truth can't be changed by opinion or belief or conspiracy theory. Truth is based on facts. The vaccine, whether it works or doesn't, can't be changed by opinion or belief. It can only be changed by facts. Does it work or not? Does it kill more people than any other? Why are we letting it out if it's killing these many people? Maybe it's not killing as many people. Maybe we got that information all wrong. Maybe that is a conspiracy theory. You have to do the investigation. In the cold light of day, with all the facts, the January 6th Commission, is their desire to come to the truth about what happened? Is it to bring out anything that could have gone on here? Were there people, as some have speculated, our friends on the left, who were looking for this to happen so that they could call it a pro-Trump rally and they could swing the election or they could do whatever they were going to do? They could impeach the president. Are we in a place where we don't think that that's real? That we don't believe that these politicians would do that? I think clearly they would do it. I think they might have done it in this case. I don't know. But you're on my investigative team, and this is how an investigation is conducted. You ask questions, and then you seek out evidence and proof and facts, and then you put it all together, and you present it as a package of facts, not opinions, not your beliefs, facts. What did we find out? What is the truth? What really happened here? In all of these instances, and the more and more we look down the road at our country, the more and more we see that there are lots and lots of questions that are not being answered. There are lots of things we should all be concerned about, no matter where we are politically. We should get to the truth if we're ever going to understand each other, if we're ever going to be able to live together and work out our country so that it is a great place for everyone. But we only do that by getting to the truth of things. When we hide, obfuscate, lie, report biasly, call people names because they have a different opinion, silence people because they want to ask questions, it is then that we can actually say America no longer exists. And that, my friends, is the start of another very, very long road. So I want to hope for the best. I want to pray for America. I want to pray for everybody on the right and the left, whoever has beliefs. Let's find a way to get together. Let's try and understand what's going on in our world. Because if we don't, we're going to lose it. But an investigation, a real investigation, will come up with lots of truthful answers because facts are facts. So I want to thank you for being here today. This is Lieutenant Joe saying, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We have to work together. We have to demand together to protect our rights, protect our country for all of us, every single American. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time on Chasing Justice.